of which all these pillars will spring up. What's the foundation of all these pillars will spring up? What did we just spend the last hour on? Where are those pillars going to come from, do you think? That's right. That's your foundation. It's the hidden marketing assets. Okay? That's going to be the base. That's the solid foundation that we want companies to have. Okay? You're going to help them see that. You're going to help them see that these assets are a foundation from which we will build these marketing pillars, all right? And we will make money generating revenue. Because, Pete, what's the chance of a company surviving if he's got 8 or 9 marketing pillars instead of just 2? That's right. Okay? Because if all he's built upon is 1 or 2, what happens when he loses his best salesperson, Rich? That's right.
And then half the time they lose the best salesperson, the salesperson goes out and steals customers from
it. Oh, yeah, it takes a base with him. That's right. I was talking to my brother who's an attorney down in Atlanta, Georgia. And he's been with this law firm for 7 years. And he didn't think he was making enough money, so he starts making some waves and gets an offer from another law firm down there. And so before he leaves, he goes into his partners and says, and it's the largest law firm in the world, Jones Day. I mean, they're just big. So he's just a little guy on the totem pole right now, you know. But over the 7 years, he's secured some clients. Okay? Well, are they really his clients? No, they belong to Jones Day. But who have they been working with? Bob Johnson. Okay? And so he goes in and says, well, I've got to leave, guys. I'm not getting enough money. Well, the only thing that kept him there and gave him a raise was that he had this client base that they knew they would lose if Bob Johnson left, see? And so as he's on his route to partner in the law firm, he says, that's the only leverage I have, Rich. It's not how good I service their clients. It's not how much money I brought in. It's if I leave, how much will it hurt? And see, so that's the way many companies are built. If they have one Yellow Page ad that's working and all of a sudden the economy dies down and nobody's moving, my Global Van Line has a full Yellow Page ad, full page. What happens if no one moves anymore in Salt Lake City? It's worthless, isn't it? Okay? And that's why you will help and service your clients by getting established multiple marketing pillars instead of just 1 or 2. Next page. Now, as we develop these marketing pillars, and as we begin working with your client and your businesses, there's something else that will spring up out of the optimization of hidden marketing assets. And as you implement multiple marketing pillars in a business, you're going to find out that you're helping your client or the business will grow in 3 ways instead of just 1. Okay? Now, what's the 1 way that a business can grow? Okay. Go out and get more prospects. And that's the traditional approach. Okay? And, hey, it's successful. I mean, advertising is a big business. All right? It makes a lot of money. And so businesses are growing and they're succeeding.
A lot of people really struggle with it, too.
A lot of people really struggle.
Even though it's the thing that most businesses focus on, it's not necessarily the thing most businesses are successful
with. Or that they should focus on. That's right. And they'll spend a lot of money. And they'll lose a lot of money at it. And it'll upset them. And they'll get frustrated. Well, welcome to the mood that you're finding them in right now. Okay? And that's the mood that you can approach them on. Because one thing that you're going to illustrate for them is that if they'll let you take the hidden marketing assets that you uncover for them as a consultant and redeploy for them in new ways that they've not done before and create multiple marketing pillars, you're now going to grow that business 3 ways instead of just 1. What's the second way that you're going to do it? You're not only going to go get more prospects, but you're going to increase the conversion rate of prospects to clients. Will that grow the business? Absolutely will. Will it do it more profitably than the acquisition of more prospects? Absolutely. Because he's not spending money to get more prospects. He's just taking the current prospect flow coming in, doing a better job with it, and increasing the conversion rate of prospects to clients, and his business will grow. Okay? Remember, that's the one phase that sales training goes after. That's all they go after, is this one right here. Okay? What's the third way of growing the business? That's right. We'll call that increasing the value or worth of customers. And you can do that two ways. One is to increase the average sale. Two would be what? That's right. Increase repeat purchasing. And that's what turned the light on for my terrarium client. He saw, geez, they can buy seeds, man. Maybe they'll buy a different size terrarium down the road. Maybe they'll buy another one during the mid-year instead of a Christmas, see? He starts seeing that, oh, we can get these customers buying from us more frequently than they'll even buy from Kmart. But we'll use Kmart to get the customer in the door, see? He just sees money all over now. He just sees it all over, okay? And they didn't see it before, all right? If they're spending $500 a year with your client now and you can get them to spend $600 a year, what do you do to his business? You grow his business, okay? And so the system that we're going to now begin teaching you and that you're going to learn about all this week is focused around these three ways to grow a business, okay? This is what sets this apart, again, from every other marketing consultant out there, is they don't see it this way. And why? Because they're getting paid not to see results of their work, but to use the methods of their work. See, the direct mail marketer wants direct mail because he gets paid to use direct mail. The sales trainer wants him to use sales training because he gets paid to use sales training. The advertiser wants him to use advertising because he gets paid to use advertising. Now, you'll get paid to use them all. Okay? But you won't care what you use because you're after the results. You're after doing them all. You're after getting them all going for him. Okay? Key difference. It's why you're here. It's what separates you from everybody else. Okay? Any questions? Okay, how are we doing? We need to take a break. You okay? Move ahead. All right, let's keep going then. Now Doug's going to come up and take you to the next portion of this workshop.
A real seminar, just as kind of an aside here for you as consultants, okay? At this point, what I always do is I say now, I want all of you to start thinking about what is your average customer worth? What is your closing ratio? How many of you know that? And, you know, some of them do and some of them don't. Most of them don't, okay? But, you know, you need to start thinking about that because in order to apply these principles, okay, that you're going to be learning about here, you need to know, you know, these things. You need to understand what is your closing rate and what is your average customer worth and understand now that there are three ways to grow the business, not just one. The first one to get more prospects. Second one is to increase closing rates. And the third one is to increase the average customer worth. And the reason why you need to know that now is because unless you know where you are today, it's pretty hard to know where you can be in the future. Okay? So, now, as an aside here, when we were doing this in a real-life seminar, I asked the group, I say, how many of you actually know what your closing rate is? How many of you know what your average customer worth is? They, you know, hold up their hand. And then I say, okay, and then I pick one of those to work through a real-life example. Okay, and I'm just going to work through a make-believe example here for you this morning to show you how this works. But in a real seminar, choose a member of the audience and actually do this in real life, and it really drives this point home. And the point that we're wanting to drive home here is this. If you will consistently work at growing the business in three ways, not just in one way, you're going to be able to experience what we call exponential growth. This is really an exciting concept, and this really is the primary sales tool that you use in getting clients. So I want you to really kind of pay attention and learn this little process here. So we use a real-life example. We pick somebody from the audience, and I say, now, would you like your business to grow? And they say, oh, yeah, I'd like my business to grow. Okay, how much would you like it to grow? Well, 10%. Okay? You guys can work through this on your page here and see how this thing works. Okay, so you want a 10% growth. Well, let's first of all then take a look at where you are today, where you are right now. Let's say that you have 100 prospects and that your closing ratio is 40%. Now, see, I'm getting these numbers from them. They're telling me when I'm doing this in a real seminar. 40% closing ratio, that means you have how many customers? 40. Okay? Richard, is that able to get the board here? If you have 40 customers, and how much is each one of them worth? Well, let's say they're each worth $1,000 each. So how many or how much would our gross sales be if we have 40 customers at $1,000 each? $40,000. Okay, so that's where we are right now. Okay, now, you want to grow your business 10%? Well, there's three ways in which you could do it. What's the first way? We can get more prospects. Now, Pete, if we have 100 prospects right now, but we want to grow the business by 10%, how many more prospects do we have to get? Another 10. So we'd have to have 110 prospects. Closing rate still 40%, but that would give us now how many buying customers? If we have 110 prospects at a 40% closing rate, 44, okay? Average customer worth is still the same at $1,000, and so our gross sales now is $44,000. Did we get our 10% increase? Okay, yeah. So that's one way to do it. What's another way to do it? Okay, another way would be to increase closing rate. So let's say we have the same 100 prospects, but we work at improving our closing rate, and we'd have to improve it now by 10%, right? So 44% closing rate, how many customers does that give us? 44. Customer worth is still $1,000. So our gross sales now, again, $44,000. So see, that's a second way that we could increase the average customer worth. You can zoom in and out on that. So that's another way to give us, you know, the 10% growth that we wanted. It's on the handle. What's the third way to grow the business? Okay. Third way is to take the customer worth up. So we have the same 100 prospects, same closing rate, 40%, gives us 40 buyers. And now if we increase customer worth by 10%, that goes up to 1,100, so 40 times 1,100, $44,000 in gross sales. So did we get our 10% growth right there? Yeah. Okay, so either of the three ways we could get the growth, okay? So I always ask them, I say, which one do you want to do? Which way do you want to use? Now, what are they always going to say? All of them. Why not do all three? Why not work on all three areas at the same time? So, let's work at getting more prospects. Let's improve our advertising, or let's make more phone calls, or see more people. Some way we'll increase the number of prospects that we have. Okay? 110. While we're doing that, let's also do some training, and let's work at getting our closing rates up. We get 44% closing rate, and that's going to now give us 48.4 buying customers. And at the same time we're doing all that, let's repackage, or let's add on or upsell or do some things here that's going to increase the average sale and get that up to 1,100. Oops. 1,100. And so now we have 48.4 buyers at $1,100 each. What's our gross sales now? Jeff? $53,240. So what's our net sales growth? Our net growth then would be an additional $13,240. So the actual growth that we achieve would be what percent? Well, the way you calculate that, if divide the 13,240 by the 40 he was already at, tells you that we get 33% growth. In other words, a small improvement in each of those three areas here gives us tremendous growth overall. A 10% improvement in each of those three areas actually gives us a 33% growth overall. Guys, this is the key. This is the key to getting those, 25 to 100% growth rates or more, getting that exponential growth, because a little bit of an improvement in each area will have dramatic overall results. Now, you see how that gives us an advantage over everybody else? Because what's everybody else working on? What's the traditional view of marketing? Let's go out and grow the business by doing what? By doing this one right there. But if we can do all three, the amount of growth we can achieve is exponential. In fact, here's some numbers you might want to write down. If we can increase each one of these areas 10% like we did here, the overall growth is 33%. If you can increase each of those areas 15%, that's going to give you 53% overall growth. 20% increase in each of those areas is going to give you 73% overall growth. A 25% increase gives you 95%. And, hey, if you want to more than double the business, all you got to do is get a 30% growth in each of those areas, and that will give you 120% overall exponential growth. So the key here, and what sets the 21st century marketing system apart is the fact that we will work in all three areas all the time. Does that make sense? And business owners at this point, man, they just start getting excited, and they start, that's tremendous. How do we do it? What's the next step? How do we get that kind of growth? Well, you get that kind of growth by implementing the system, implementing the pillars of marketing in the 21st century marketing system. And what we're going to teach you here today are seven pillars of marketing, seven things that you should build your business upon all the time that will enable you to get that exponential growth and grow the business in all three ways.
Do you include all these seven in the initial seminar?
Yes. This is still the initial seminar. That's right.
Oh man,
tremendous meat. Now, a lot of people, when we did this, they say, well, gee, if you give them all this great stuff, aren't they just going to go back and do it themselves? Well, they could, but they don't, okay? But what it does do is it teaches them enough and shows them enough of what they should be doing, what they need to be doing. They realize they really have to be doing it, but they don't have the time. They don't have the expertise.
So,
hopefully, yeah. Yeah, they realize that maybe we do, and maybe we ought to come in and do it for them, okay? In fact, you'll see at the end, there's a whole little sales presentation that we do here that sets all that up, okay? So we'll teach you that here in just a second. All right, so the first pillar. Now, and the other thing I always say, folks, is listen, if you don't get anything at all out of the session today, out of this seminar today, but this next part, this is the part that you really should get, because this is really, really crucial. And I think, Jeff, you mentioned a little while ago about the unique selling proposition. Now, that's the first pillar of marketing, the unique selling proposition, and that's what we mean by USP or EVP, extra value proposition. Now, the reason why this is so important, business owners, is because it is very unlikely that your business will survive all the challenges of business environment today and in the future. It's very unlikely that your company will survive unless you can answer these two questions. Now, those two questions are, number one, why do people do business with you? Why do people do business with you? Okay? That's the first question. You need to be able to answer that question. If you cannot answer that question and do it in about 90 words or less, it's probably unlikely that your company is going to be around very long. Okay? Now, the second question you've got to be able to answer is this. If people are not doing business with you now, why should they? Why should they do business with you? Okay? Now, the answers to those questions forms what we call your USP, your unique selling proposition, or your extra value proposition. Why do people do business with you, or why do people not do business, or why, if they're not doing business with you now, why should they do business with you? Because if you can't answer that, it's probably unlikely you're going to be around, because in order to succeed today, it's absolutely critical that you have what we call some kind of a sustainable competitive advantage in the marketplace. Okay? For example, why do people do business with Walmart?
Big selection and a lot of value.
Okay. Big selection, a lot of value for the dollar spent. They position themselves as being low price, the cheapest, right? Okay? There are three ways in which a company can achieve a unique selling proposition or an extra value proposition. The first way is by being a price leader. Now, what does it mean to be a price leader? It means that for whatever it is that you sell it cheaper than anybody else, i.e. Walmart. I mean, they've built a huge business simply by positioning themselves as being cheaper than anybody else, haven't they? Okay? Now, that's great, but how many price leaders can there be in any market, Ben? How many can have the lowest price? Only one, right? What's going to happen if everybody is out there constantly battling and competing and all trying to have the lowest price all the time? What's going to happen? Pretty soon, the margins keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller until nobody's making any money. And then when you're not making any money, then you're out of business and not having a whole lot of fun at it, right? So if you're the price leader, that's great. Now, Walmart has built a huge empire on being the price leader, haven't they? But not everybody is going to be able to be the price leader. Not every business can be the price leader every day. And that is a big, big mistake that many business owners make, is they think, well, the only reason we're going to get people to buy from us is if we lower the price. And so they're constantly cutting margins, reducing the profitability of their business in order to compete by price. And,
my brother works for a company that they do a lot of the outsourcing for health clubs. They bill all their clientele and everything. He used to tell me this about a couple of years ago. They just suddenly realized that they were struggling and decided they had to raise their prices, and it just a lot of trepidation in doing that, but they found when they raised their prices, their closing rates went up.
Really? Well, you know, that's...
There was a perception that because they were paying so little for the service, that it wasn't worth the value. and they raised the prices, the closing rates
went up. Well, you know, that's a good story, because it is true a lot of companies have gone out of business because their prices were too low. In fact, there's been more that have gone out of business because of that than have gone out because their prices were too high. And who determines the price? Who determines the price for what a product sells for? Yeah, the marketplace, okay? And I think a lot of times business owners make the mistake of assuming that they set the price, and so they set a price based on what they feel they should be selling at, which may or may not be what the market price actually is. So one of the things you're going to be learning this week is about testing and how to test, you know, different price structures and different price levels and you know, being able to find the optimum price, because, you know, that's really, really true. Now, is price the only reason that people buy anything? Okay. There's many, many, many other reasons that people buy things, okay? Give you a quick example here. You know, I've got this cross pen here, and I paid, I don't know, probably about $20-$25 for this thing a few years ago. And I mean, it's a nice pen and all, but, you know, why in the world would I be stupid enough to go out and buy a pen like this? When I could have gone down to the Circle K store here, and I could have got one of these for about, you know, about a quarter, okay, or less. I see you guys got one, you got one, you know. I mean, it's a great pen. I mean, they work, they write just fine, don't they? Why in the world, though, would I be dumb enough to go out and pay $25 for this pen? I could have got one that does just the same for a quarter or less. Okay, that's probably the number one reason is, hey, well, you know, I have a nice pen and cross and all that. Boy, I must be an important guy. I must be successful, right? It makes me feel good, makes me feel better, and you know, it's kind of a little bit of ego gratification for me. And that's a very important thing, okay? And that's why I bought it. And, you know, that's a very important concept, that price is not the only reason that people buy stuff. There's a lot of other reasons, you know. And things that you know, that that are important to people, other than just the price. Now, if we call that differentiation, by the way, what is it that differentiates? What is it that differentiates the cross pen from the Bic? Well, it's the image, it's the status, it's the guarantee, it's the quality, the longevity, all those different factors. And those are important to people, and that's important enough that somebody would pay $20 as opposed to, you know, 20 cents to get that pen. But now that brings up another important marketing concept, okay? What if I, let me see your pen again there, Rich. What if I were looking to buy a new pen, and personally I saw no difference between the cross and the Bic, other than the fact the cross was 25 and the Bic was 25 cents? And I perceive no other difference. Well, they look a little different, but so what? They both get the job done. Okay? Which one would I buy? The Bic. Okay? Every time. And this is another very, very important marketing concept that you need to kind of understand. And that is this, that if there is no perception of value, the issue will be price every time. The buying decision will be made on price every time, unless there is some other perception of value. Now, that's why when Walmart comes into an area, now do you guys have Walmart in your area now, probably what, close to Saskatoon? Okay. When Walmart comes into an area like Saskatoon, did you know that 12 to 15 other companies will go out of business? And the reason why that happens is because those 12 to 15 other companies have not created any kind of perception of value. They've not created any differentiation. And people will then automatically go to Walmart because they perceive, well, it's going to be lower priced. So that's where they wind up going. Okay? Very, very important concept. See, if price were the only reason why people bought things, then, you know, cross pens would be out of business, Rolex watches would be out of business, Mercedes-Benz would be out of business. I mean, you know, we'd all be riding with Bics, wearing Timexes, and driving 71 Ford Pintos, you know, or something like that. Okay. okay? So price is not the only reason. Now, what your job as a consultant is obviously to help your client to define and figure out what it is that differentiates them or sets them apart or provides extra value. Okay, now the third way to achieve a USP or EVP is by doing what we call focusing. Okay? Focusing. And that means that you zero in on only one narrowly defined segment of the market, and then you either become the price leader or you differentiate yourself in some way. I'll give you a quick example of that. I used to own a Saab, a Saab Turbo 900. What's that? Well, you have one of those too? Anyway, when I first bought the car, I realized fairly early on in my relationship with the car that that they require a lot of maintenance, and that maintenance can be pretty expensive, right? Well, there was for a long time only one dealership here in Salt Lake that did all of the factory authorized maintenance work on those cars, and because he was the only one and had a nice, beautiful, big dealership to support, he charged a lot of money for the service. Well, there was a couple of fellows who worked for him who looked at that as kind of an opportunity, and they decided, well, you know, maybe we ought to go out and open up our own Saab service center, and maybe we could do the work for a little bit cheaper, and maybe we could attract some of his customers away. Well, they did do that. They went out, they opened up their own service center, and they didn't have the big overhead and the big dealership and all that. They worked in an industrial area, just in a garage, and, you know, pretty low overhead. And so they were able to charge a lot less money, and they did attract a lot of his business away. And they focused just on the market for Saabs, just the people who drove those cars. And they were really successful with it. Now, what would have happened, Jeff, what would have happened if those guys would have gone out and said, hey, you know, we're good mechanics, and so not only can we work on Saabs, but also we can work on Fords and Chevrolets and Toyotas and Hondas and everything else too. What would happen then?
They would have blended in the background.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you look up in the Salt Lake Yellow Pages under automotive repair, I mean, there's probably 800, you know, businesses that do all that kind of stuff. But when you look under Saab repair, there's only two. There's him and the other guy, and he's the price leader, okay? So he focused in on a market and became the price leader, right? So that's a very, very, very important concept. All right, once the company has decided or determined what the USP is, who should know about it? Who should know what the USP is?
Everybody.
Yeah, everybody. In fact, you need to be able to express that USP in about 90 words or less. Now, why do you think it would be important that you could express that USP in 90 words or less? Okay, you could do that. Also, I think the main reason is because if you can't tell me in 90 words or less why I should do business with you, if you can't tell me pretty succinctly, it probably means you don't really know. Okay? See, it's like if people ask, why should we do business with 21st Century Marketing Systems? Our USP is this. You should do business with us because we view marketing differently. We help you to leverage and optimize hidden marketing assets in order to grow your business in three ways. We create and implement marketing systems to do that, and we guarantee results. That's it. Okay? That's the USP. That's what sets us apart from everybody else. Okay? So, we can express that in about 90 words or less. Now, that needs to be integrated throughout the entire marketing concept, like you said, okay? And everybody should know about it. Now, the thing about that USP is, first of all, if it's going to work, it first of all has to be some kind of a benefit. I mean, if whatever you say your unique selling proposition is, if it's something nobody really wants, doesn't matter. You know, LensCrafter Optical. They say, come to LensCrafter because of you get your glasses 60 minutes. You get your glasses in about an hour, okay? So what's the unique selling proposition they're saying there?
Fast service.
Come to us, you get your glasses done quickly. Well, that's worked for them. But what if they found out, what if they went out and said, we're going to get glasses done in about an hour, but they discovered that, well, nobody really cares. Nobody really wants glasses in an hour. Wouldn't do any good, right? Wouldn't do any good. So it has to be a benefit. Secondly, you want to try to make some kind of a slogan or tagline or something that that will make it easy for people to remember. LensCrafter Optical, glasses in about an hour. It's easy for people to remember, okay? And it's important that you do that because, as you said, that USP needs to be integrated every place, okay? And that's this brings us to the second... Oh, before we do that, tell me, looking over here at the three ways to grow the business, by having a good, strong, unique selling proposition, is that going to help us to get more prospects? Okay? If we have a USP, is that going to help us to improve our closing ratio? And if we have a USP, is that going to help improve our average customer worth, perhaps? Sure it is, okay? So that's why I said that USP is so important then, because it is going to work in all three areas. Okay? So that's pillar number one, to have a good, sustainable, competitive advantage or unique selling proposition. Now, marketing pillar number two, optimizing our current marketing process. Now, the first step, the first thing that we want to do with that, number one here, if we're going to optimize our current marketing, optimize our current success, what is it you suppose we ought to be doing? Step number one, we've got our USP, what should we do with it now? Yeah, we want to integrate the USP. Tell you a little story here. I have a client here in the, along the Wasatch Front, a company called Juliet's. And Juliet's is a company that they have a chain of four retail stores in some of the malls here. And what they do is they sell ladies' lingerie. Well, about a couple of years ago, we were working with them, and you know, we were meeting with the owner, and he was in a situation where he'd been in business for a long time, and he wanted to sell. He wanted to get out and sell the business, but he couldn't sell it because sales were trending down. In fact, they were down, going down about 12% from, you know, where they had been, and trending downward, and he didn't know what to do, and he couldn't sell it for what he wanted to sell it for as long as sales were on the downturn. So, you know, we go in there, and first question that Richard asked him was this: why do people do business with you? He said, well, people do business with Juliet's because, you know, back 30 years ago when we first started the business, we thought that there would probably be a need for women to have custom-fitted bras. Because a lot of women, they'll go out and they'll buy the bras, you know, at the department store or the, you know, Kmart or wherever, and they don't fit properly and they're uncomfortable, and so they take them home and they throw them in the drawer and never wear them again because they're uncomfortable. They go out and buy another one, and this is a, you know, kind of an ongoing process. And they said, if you don't believe that, go home and ask your wife, look in her drawer, and you'll find there's a whole bunch in there like that. So we did that, and sure enough, you know, that was the case. So he says, we thought there was a business providing custom-fitted bras because having a custom-fitted bra would help women to look better, they would feel better, and they would save money because they wouldn't be going out buying a bunch of bras all the time that didn't work. He says, we built our whole company based on that concept. Wow, that was great. Good idea. So next step was we went out on the sales floor and started listening to what the salespeople were saying to the customers. Well, guess what? Not once did we ever hear any of the salespeople on the sales floor talk about custom-fitted bras helping you to look better, feel better, and save money. They weren't telling the story at all. So we went back and told the owner, look, you know, your USP is not being told. You know, your salespeople are not selling what you do best. And so we brought them in, spent a little time training them on how to integrate that USP into the sales process. And within 30 days, sales were back up. back up to 12%. He was down plus an additional 12%. And as it turned out, he later ended up selling the business and got actually 50% more for it than he initially had started out asking, all because of that one very simple initial concept and reintegrating that USP back into the sales process. So step one, integrate the USP and train the staff, okay? Train the sales staff. Train everybody in the business to understand and know what your unique selling process is or unique selling proposition is, okay? That's going to help you to increase closing rates, okay? And we do that by training the staff, not only in USP integration, but also in basic sales skills as well. Okay? And secondly, probably the most important thing here in terms of increasing closing rates, and if you don't learn anything else about increasing closing rates other than this point, learn this. There's three things that will help to dramatically improve the closing rate. The first one is to follow up. Second one is to follow up. And the third one would be to follow up. Okay? Follow up, follow up, follow up is probably the most important thing that you can do in terms of increasing that closing rate. We have a client we're working with right now that owns a bunch of apartments here in the Salt Lake Valley. And it's kind of interesting, you know, we were doing some competitive analysis and going around to some of the other apartment communities that were his competitors. And it was really interesting that not one of the all the other apartment communities that we talked to, not one of them, when we went in there and inquired about apartments, not one of them took our name or our phone number or had any way to follow up with us or get back to us at all, you know. So even if we were interested in renting their apartment, there was no way they could contact us. So, you know, follow up, follow up, follow up will probably do more than anything else at increasing, you know, the overall closing rate. Okay, and then number three, increasing average customer worth by optimizing our current marketing. First one would be to do what we call bump up or upsell. Okay, add-on, sell. And the second one is packaging. Okay, how many of you have gone into a McDonald's or any other fast food restaurant lately? Now, it used to be you go into a McDonald's and you'd order your Big Mac, your fries, and your Coke, or, you know, whatever. But now, what have they done differently, Jeff? How have they... How do you typically now order when you go to a McDonald's? Yeah, they have their full meal combo deal. So instead of going in and ordering your sandwich and drink, you go in and order, you know, combo meal number three. Okay, now what they have done there is they have repackaged and put these combo meals together because what they have discovered is that people will buy more. Okay? Whereas in the past, maybe they would only buy the sandwich and the drink. Now they're buying the sandwich, the drink, and the fries. Okay. I don't know. I haven't either. But they've done two things. Well, actually, they've done three things. Okay. First thing is, they have packaged it so that perhaps you will buy more. Secondly, they have packaged it so that it makes it easier for you to buy. So you don't have to make all these decisions. You know, all you have to do is say, I want number three or whatever. And the third thing they have been trained to do then is you go and you order your combo meal number three. They say, great. Then what's the next thing they ask you? Okay, do you want a dessert or do you want to upsize it? You want to supersize it. So they're bumping you up. They're upselling. They're add-on selling. Okay? Very, very, very valuable concept. Now, you've seen, you know, McDonald's is doing it and many of the other fast food restaurants are doing it. Why? Because it works. Now, if those guys are doing it, if the big guys are doing it, why shouldn't you be doing it? Why shouldn't we be doing it, okay? Increasing average customer worth through bump-ups, upsells, add-ons, and packaging, okay? So the second marketing pillar, then, is helping us to do what in terms of the three ways to grow the business? If we're maximizing our current marketing, is that helping us to increase our closing percentages? Yeah. Yeah. And it's helping us to increase our customer worth. Okay? And that's pillar number two, or in the marketing, in the 21st century marketing system, that's project number two that you'd be doing for your clients as well. Okay? So, those are the first two pillars of marketing, having a unique selling proposition, and number two, leveraging or optimizing the current marketing process. Now, does anybody need to take a break here? Richard's going to come back up and go through the next one. Do I do the next one, or do you do the next one? You do the next one. Okay. Anybody need to take a break? Okay, let's take a break. This gives us